Well, hello there.
Hello.
Welcome to the Bitter End Podcast, episode 2, season 2, with me, Tom Denny.
And me, Todd Jordan. We are back, baby.
Damn right. And you know what we're talking about? Oh my God, I'm so excited. We are talking about Highlander 2, The Quickening.
The Quickening.
What has been considered by some to be one of the worst sequels of all time.
Now, Tom, we have been friends for a long time, but I think one of our greatest bonding experiences, at least from my point of view, was the first time that you and I sat down to watch Highlander 2, The Quickening.
My tiny little mind rocketed out of the top of my head and splattered the ceiling of your flat.
I hope you don't mind me saying, you lit up like a Christmas tree. Yeah. And for a good few months afterwards would regularly email me homemade Photoshopped fan art of Highlander 2.
It's not great, but it's pretty good.
It does Highlander 2 better than any other film.
Yeah, out of all, fucking. So you're in for a treat, folks. I mean, when I say treat, you may be in for an absolutely terrible time, but there is, for better or worse, there is no other film like Highlander 2.
It's a truly unique ride.
So, we've watched the trailer for it.
We have.
And
it's fucking batshit.
Yeah.
Because for a start, you've got Sean Connery back in it. Well, he died in the first one.
Yeah, you've got this voiceover of Sean Connery being like, oh, if you should ever need me, we've bonded by something even stronger than death. Just say my name.
That's all it does. So he didn't, he'd never said his name this whole
time. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He never thought, all in all these dicings with the Kirk, and he's like, don't really need Ramirez. And you get this shot of old Lambo just being like, Ramirez!
And then he pops up and winks at the camera and is like, your card?
Yeah. And then it's like, 500 years in the future, the hunt for the Immortals is on again, and stuff's pretty bad.
He's like, humans are trapped underneath their own ozone layer.
Yeah, so basically it's a lot more, it's futuristic, this one. It looks more like an action film. Like, because I would class like Highlander as like action fantasy, but this is like, it looks action. There's like, there's dudes with guns, and it's really, it's got that tone, that late 80s, early 90s action-y kind of. It looks like it could be like a cutscene from like Terminator or something.
What is the year?
It's from 1991.
91.
So quite a long gap between movies.
Yeah.
While they scratched their heads and thought like, we don't have a sequel. And then
the one that everyone is desperately crying out for.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, it's weird anyway, because this must be the fact that the first one wasn't a box office success, but then became a cult hit.
Mm.
So it's like one of those things, you know, where like people keep on asking for something for such a long time, and eventually it kind of comes out. Who knows? Todd?
Yeah?
Do you want to happen a guess,
mate,
at the IMDb score of Highlander 2, The Quickening from 1991?
Now, I feel, guys, like I am a bit of an... at a bit of an unfair advantage here, because I've seen the film
before.
You've
seen it. You know what it's all about.
I know what it's all about. Now, I love it. But I don't know if my opinions are not
shared by everyone else.
So, judging by how I think the rest of the world will have received this film, I'm going to say 4.6.
Mate, you're pretty close. It's a 4.
Just a solid 4.
Solid 4 on IMDb, which is higher than I actually thought it would be. Such is the legend of this film's badness.
Yeah.
That said, Rotten Tomatoes, 0.
0?
Yeah, it gets a 0 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Whoa.
So, and that's a pretty big gap in, you know, between 4 and 0. That's a lot.
This is a big tangled mess of wool, and you and me need to dive in headfirst.
Let's just
try
do it. We'll talk about
this beast.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in a bit. See you guys in a bit. We're going for The Quickening.
Woo!
That's not how The Quickening goes. They're not ghosts.
It's a kind of magic.
Yes. Go home, Highlander 2. You are drunk.
My God.
This film is, if you're watching it at home, That was weird, right?
That was pretty weird. Get it together, mate.
Yeah, so this film was troubled during its making for a lot of reasons. I don't think anyone really wanted to be involved in it. I know Christopher Lambchop didn't want to be in it.
His best mate, Sean Connery.
Yeah, because he enjoyed working with him so much the first time. He made him come back.
I think it's quite adorable that they're like
yeah. The
best of pals.
Yeah, I think that's nice. Like, apparently they called themselves like each other like McLeod and Ramirez on set, which is quite cute. But then they were shooting the film in like Argentina, and like the Argentinian economy collapsed during the film, which is the reason why the film, I think the company went into bankruptcy, and the film was edited together by the accountants who like took over the holdings or whatever.
You can fucking tell.
Yeah,
I know that Lammy Lambchop got scammed by some people pretending to be the ad company that were making the posters for the film. He invested in what he thought was promotions for the film, which just turned out to be some Argentinian scammers, and he lost all his money.
Oh, yeah. So this was a troubled movie. It was cut. Yeah, so like this cut of the film that we've just watched was basically cut together by accountants who just like put together the bits that they thought would be make up a popular film.
Which is why about a quarter of it is explosions and the villain laughing and Lamb Chop like gurning.
Yes, but let's start at the beginning with what the fuck is going on.
Wind it back. Okay.
In this movie. So,
Forget everything that you think you know about Highlander, because this film throws it out the fucking window.
Yeah, so basically, we start off like 1999. That's
1999.
Where we start off. And there's a bit of exposition that the world's ozone layer has completely just been destroyed, and people have no shelter from the sun. People are dying.
Who steps up? Fucking Lammy Lambchop steps up, because of course his experience as an immortal sword fighter, a previously immortal sword fighter, means he knows how to block the hole in the ozone layer.
Well, it's probably because he experienced the quickening when he won the prize, and so he knows everything. He's now not going under the name of Russell Nash, he's just gone back to being Connor McLeod. And then him and this guy, Dr. Namath, they basically create this like electromagnetic shield that creates an artificial ozone layer.
Yeah, great. You think everybody's safe.
That's cool. And then we cut forward another 25 years
or so
to the future. And the effect of that shield is that everything now looks like a cross between Tim Burton's Batman and the Super Mario Brothers film.
Yeah.
Like everything is like sort of like black and like rusty, and there's steam coming out of everything. There's neon lights everywhere. Basically, old Lambo, he says that the cure was worse than the disease. That basically everything is fucking horrible under the shield. And he is old now.
He's old.
Because now he's mortal. And my God, him as his old man voice.
It's hilarious. So they've put this like fake aging makeup on him, supposedly only to age him 25 years, but he looks closer to 70. And he goes, whoa, what's his voice like? Hey, Jimmy.
Yeah. Hello. I'm really old now.
I forgot. Oh, no, but it's even more whispering like that. It's like a godfather. He's like, hey, Jimmy. Yeah, I forgot about how things used to be. I'm Connor McLeod.
Yeah, it sounds like he's on death's door, and I think he's pretty much ready for it.
Yeah, everything's black. If you've seen the film Daybreakers, the film about where when vampires take over the world, and it's a world run by vampires, and they're running out of humans, and they're starving, this film looks like the world run by vampires. Everyone's driving out in cars with blacked out windows, and everything's black.
Yeah, and the way that so now the shield is basically being run by the Shield Corporation.
TSC, the Shield Corporation,
and they're basically like the most powerful company in the planet, because they basically keep everybody from dying. And then there is also a resistance called Cobalt, who I think believe that the ozone layer has regenerated, and they want to tear down the shield.
That's a very bold claim. Now, they like, surprise, surprise, it turns out they are correct. The ozone layer has regenerated itself. But how do they fucking know that?
I know. Insider
this thing that's
knowledge,
keeping literally everybody alive. They're like, it's probably don't need it. Take it down.
Yeah. So That's the opening premise for the film. And, you know, so, okay, it's...
Wildly different direction.
Yeah, but stands to reason, like, in the timeline of Highlander, that we're going forward. But now...
Does it stand to reason at all? Sorry to interrupt, but, like, right, makes sense, maybe set the sequel in the future. Hmm. Yeah, maybe it makes sense if the characters are immortal still, but they're not immortal anymore.
Oh,
why
well.
Set it in the future?
Yes, well, the thing is, like, it's one of the things you can only do that because you can't do anything like any flashback films, because then there's no stakes, because you know that he's going to be fine. Now, here's the important bit, folks.
Oh, God.
So, this is very early on in the film, and we see the very old Connor McLeod going to the opera.
Yeah, falls asleep.
Yeah, and the opera is kind of like a homage to the wrestling bit. You get this big crane shot around the opera house, and everything's fucked in the future. The opera house looks like shit.
It's all leaky.
And then he is, he's just like kind of nodding off, and then he has a little kind of like voice in his head of Ramirez, played by Sean Connery.
Sean Connery died in the last film, didn't he?
He did die, most definitely. He died in like the 1600s.
Yeah, had his head chopped off by the Kurgan.
Yeah, so this voice pops into his head and goes, "Remember, Highlander, remember your beginning in a faraway galaxy."
Hold up!
Hold up! At which point, Lambo just goes, "Oh yes, I remember." And then the most important words in cinema flash up on screen. The words, "The planet Zeist, 500 years ago." And we're on an alien planet.
A desert planet. It's called Zeist.
It looks like something from Dune.
Yep. Turns out that the immortals, they're actually Zeistian aliens. Fucking Sean Connery's there.
Yeah.
Lammy Lambo's there. Yeah. And they're running a resistance against the evil General Katana.
Yeah.
Who looks like the baddie from the He-Man film.
Yeah. And then, like, so... Sean Connery like is like, "Free people of the planet Zeist, we must fight against Katana," as he likes to pronounce Katana. And they're like, it's like, "But I won't lead you." And it's like, "Who will, Ramirez?" He's like, and he waggles his sword in the air like this really jaunty way. He's like, "Here's among you." There, and he points at McLeod.
So this is before the events of the first film.
Well, this is 500 years ago.
Yeah.
On an alien planet.
So,
and then basically, Ramirez says that McLeod is going to lead the resistance because of derpity do. No, I don't know why. And then they have the quickening. Now, okay, we're going to be dipping into Rules Corner, our feature for the Highlander season, quite a bit in this episode. So obviously, the rules of the Highlanders. Like mythos have gone kind of crazy here because
let's save the rules analysis.
Yeah, we've got that. But they have the quickening. In this film, the quickening involves the two of them sticking their fingers in a bowl of water and then lightning shooting between their faces. And then Sean Connery is like, "We're now linked forever. A link that cannot even be broken by death." And then
Dude, your Egyptian accent is tight.
It's pretty... Yeah, yeah. An Egyptian, Zeistian, Spanish, Scotsman.
Oh, God.
And then Katana attacks... and kills everybody.
They're not immortal.
Yeah, they're not immortal on Zeist. Kills everybody bar Ramirez and McLeod.
Yeah.
And then the Council of Zeist banish them for doing the for the rebellion.
Yeah.
And their banishment is that they are sent to Earth, where they will be immortal.
Yeah, because Zeistians are immortal on Earth.
Yeah,
as long as there's other Zeistians. If there's only one, then they're not immortal.
Yeah, and so then whoever is left and wins the prize, like in the first film, they then can either have the choice of returning to Zeist or living as a mortal on Earth.
So all of this... almost, if you'd suffered a serious head injury, almost would be like a sensible choice for moving on. But... surely when Sean Connery in the first film comes and meets Lamb Chop, he would be like, "Oh, you're right, mate. I remember you from when we fought that war on our home planet."
Yes, exactly.
And no, but they don't bring it up.
Yeah, they
don't mention it.
They mention the fact that, like, you know, like, McLeod is kind of like, "Will we be together on Earth?" And then, like, he's like, "Oh, no, not right away, but I'm sure we'll find each other." So,
and when we do, we'll never ever mention having met before,
and we'll
fact that we're aliens.
Yes, and won't know each other, and you won't be aware that you're immortal, even though this guy has just told us that we will be immortal. Also, in the first film, Sean Connery says that he has been alive for well over 1,000 years.
Yes.
When he meets McClatchy. So, flashing back 500 years, that's like 1,000 years from like the 15th or 16th century. Mm. It's so... What?
Like, I knew Nefertiti. She was a very beautiful woman. It's yeah. Like, bullshit, Sean Connery. You're just saying that shit to try and impress people.
Yeah, it's...
What the fuck, man?
It's a rum old do.
Yeah.
And this is within the first 15 minutes of the film.
Yeah. So even if you allow all of this, even if you allow it, okay, fine. But Sean Connery still had his head chopped off by the Kurgan. Maybe he was an alien. Still had his fucking head chopped off. Well, Tom.
Well, we're going to get to that in a bit.
So this time has passed. It's 50 years has passed since MacLeod won the prize. He's been mortal for 50 years.
Yes, and has been banished from Zeiss for at least 500 years.
He's clearly made his choice. He didn't want to go back to Zeiss. He was happy to stay. Yeah. There's even a little line where he says, I'm ready to grow old and die on Earth. Mm. Katana, just now, all of a sudden, decides, you know what? Not having it. I'm sending some bros to Earth to take down MacLeod.
Oh my God. And the bros that he sends down to Earth are... Basically, I would describe them as steampunk porcupine men.
Yeah.
They've got, like, black leather suits, big black goggles, and, like, long hair, which has loads of porcupine quills running through it.
Yeah.
And they're, like, really boggly-eyed loons.
They just twitch their heads around and they go, yeah!
Yeah, and stick their tongues out. And,
And they've both got nose armour.
Yes.
No armor anywhere else, just on their noses.
Yeah.
One of them's got electro wings and can fly that way, and the other one's got a hoverboard.
Yes. So, Katana sends them down to Earth to go and kill MacLeod now.
Why now? But
who knows? Now, before they get to MacLeod, MacLeod, after the opera, goes to a bar. The scene is not of a lot of consequence in the film, apart from he gets harassed by this lady who recognises him as the person who generated the shield. And she is not happy for him turning the world into shit. Now, what is important about this actress playing she's called Drunk, in the credits, Todd?
Well, Tom, Tom did an excellent job of spotting this. The character of Drunk, who says, you MacLeod, I always wanted to meet the guy who turned the world to shit. She's played by an actress called Rusty Schwimmer, who we looked up is also the actress that played Joey B from Friday the 13th, 9 Jason Goes to Hell.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
It's all tying together.
And there was a Jason Voorhees guy in the crowd of the wrestling match in the last film. Is every single one of these films going to have a connection to Friday the 13th?
I really hope so.
Oh, my God.
So we were really stoked to find that out.
That was a real pause the film and have a high five moment.
Yes, it really was. But then the porcupines show up.
God, and porcupines.
Oh no, before the porcupines show up, who is it? The leader of the Louise, who is the head of Cobalt.
The rebellion.
Yeah, she goes and finds MacLeod, and I think because he was instrumental in building the shield, she's come to talk to him because she needs to tear the shield down or find Dr. Namath. Something like...
She's looking for the MacGuffin.
Yeah, yeah. There's, you know, none of this film makes any sense. So anyway, she finds him and he's like, oh, just leave me alone, please. And she's like, no, I'm not going to. I'm getting in your car. The porcupine men show up. Suddenly, MacLeod kind of feels a bit of quickening because some Zeistians are back on Earth. Quick question, why do these Zeistians have porcupine quills and none of the other ones do? I don't know. Anyway, so we've got... He experiences the quickening. The porcupine men come out and start to fight him. While he's fighting him, he shouts, Ramirez, my old friend!
For no reason!
For no reason. He's now suddenly remembered that Ramirez was a thing. Basically, what happens is he kills one of the porcupine men. And when he does that, I don't know, like, it's kind of reset, like, the quickening and the Zeistian immortal whatever it is. And he has the quickening again. Everything explodes.
It's the biggest literally, quickening ever!
Literally, there's, like, 2 or 3 minutes of explosions.
Everything
blows up. And then he...
Kablooey!
He regenerates in a Doctor Who-esque fashion.
He's young again.
Into a young, yeah, now he's a young Lam-Lam.
Yeah.
And then he straps on some fucking hover skates.
Yeah, that he got off the porcupine guy he killed.
And fights the other porcupine guy, kills him, not quite so much stuff blows up, but he's now immortal again.
Everyone keeps calling him the Highlander, even the porcupine men, although the only thing that defines him as being the Highlander is that he lived in Scotland for a bit after being banished to Earth from Zeist.
Yes.
So why do they call him the Highlander? Why don't they just call him Zeist or MacLeod? Or did he have a name on Zeist?
Yeah, did they know? Yeah, like, it's, yeah, they got a really weird that, like,
because Sean Connery Zeist was called Ramirez on Zeist
and he was called MacLeod, or like,
so that doesn't make any sense.
Very strange, very strange. So then in instantly, after all of this, like, head chopping and exploding and jetpack porcupines, MacLeod and Louise share a kiss after having only had, like, 2 minutes of dialogue on
the
screen.
He doesn't even know her name.
Yeah, like, she introduces herself halfway through the kiss. And then... The second time, the second porcupine that he kills, he experiences the quickening again, and during that, he goes, Ramirez! And this lightning bolt kind of shoots out of him, bounces off of the solar shield, and goes, zaps all the way over to Scotland, where suddenly, fucking Ramirez regenerates in the middle of a performance of Hamlet.
Yep. And he's very confused because he hasn't read Hamlet, so he thinks that it's just this crazy things going on. He makes some wisecracks, the audience applaud, and he fucks off.
Yeah, and you're kind of like, okay, so that's interesting.
So it just took MacLeod saying his name to bring him back to life. So the whole time since he's been dead, few hundred years?
Well, no, like the first time he's like, Ramirez, my friend, he doesn't come back. He comes back after he gets a bit of quickening,
I guess,
from killing somebody.
But in the first film, there were other points after Sean Connery's death where Lambert got the quickening and probably would have also since then said Ramirez. Just didn't do anything then.
Yeah, it's...
There is little logic to it. So it is at this point in the film, when Ramirez comes back, that Tom Denny turns to me on the sofa and says, I really like this film.
Yeah.
And it is also at this point that the film takes a massive fucking nosedive. And
yeah,
everything starts to go even more... Because at this point, this is just like a ridiculous, preposterous romp. It's
yeah,
an enjoyable folly. It's like, they made so many mistakes, I can't believe this got made. This is also where you can see that just the wheels come off and
oh,
they've
yeah,
got another 45, 50 minutes of runtime
yeah,
to fill.
It's...
And nothing. They've got nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, so like this film has like been slammed really hard and it's easy to see why, but I've read a lot of things saying like, oh, it's not even so bad, it's good. I disagree with that. I think the first half hour of this is a rip-snorting good time at just how... what a load of garbage it is. Like, you know, like the complete disregard, like one film in to like the series for like what has come before is staggering. Like the first time I watched this film, we watched it like back to back with the first Highlander because you said like, oh yeah man, you should watch Highlander, it's really fun. Oh, should we watch the second one as well? And we watched it and we were, you know, like, so like instantly going in, it was just like, no, what is, no, wait, so many questions. I would have loved to have been able to see this in the cinema when it came out and just to feel the atmosphere in the cinema of people being like, you what? I would have loved it.
To skip to the end a bit. I don't want to like go over the plot too much.
Basically what happens is now Katana comes down to Earth.
Yep. He's like, if you want to get a job done, you have to do it yourself.
Yep. There's an amazing scene where when he hits Earth, he lands on the middle of a subway train.
Yep.
And says, oh, I guess I'm not in Kansas anymore, which means that did they have the Wizard of Oz on Zeist?
They obviously did.
They obviously did. There's this amazing scene of him just laughing like a maniac while driving a train. It's like, you know, when like the Kurgan laughs in the first It's even more insane than that. He basically goes to the SHIELD Corporation.
Takes it over.
Yeah, the SHIELD Corporation is run by the grumpy doctor from Scrubs.
Ugh.
Who's playing like a really evil, slimy businessman.
Yeah.
Why he is there, I do not understands.
No.
He goes back to where he confronts MacLeod.
Briefly, and, but on holy ground.
On holy ground. That we'll get to that in a bit. But basically, he's... Connor calls him on it. He's like, why did you come here?
Yeah, like, what? Seriously,
yeah,
bro.
They call out the dumbness of their own plot by just being like, I was happy here. You've reset everything. I might as well go back to Zeiss now. And then you see this look on Katana's face where he's like, wah, wah, wah. But for some reason, he's taken over the S.H.I.E.L.D. Corporation. I think maybe because he's like, I'm going to rule Earth and Zeist, and the way to do that is by controlling the S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I don't... He's something like that. But yeah, so MacLeod's immortal, Katana's immortal.
Ramirez flies over...
Yeah, in a plane. Oh, in a hilarious bit of him being on a... Oh, there's this whole sort of there's this whole wacky musical montage of him buying a suit.
Yeah, to soundtracked by the William Tell Overture.
And it's just him trying on lots of different clothes and drinking whiskey and smirking.
I think they just might have filmed just a bit of Sean Connery's everyday life and just dropped it in the film.
Ugh.
So anyway, he meets up with MacLeod.
In New York. And yeah, then they go Katana.
Yeah, them and Louise, they go try and stop Katana. They crash into, like, where the S.H.I.E.L.D. is being generated.
It's like a big sort of beam of light that shoots up into the sky.
They go there under the premise of saving Dr. Namath, who has been kidnapped by the evil doctor from Scrubs.
Because
Dr. Namath has told MacLeod that the ozone is regenerated. So there's no reason for the S.H.I.E.L.D. to be there. Evil doctor from Scrubs keeping the S.H.I.E.L.D. there because that gives him all the power.
This is making me tired even reliving it.
Then basically, Katana kills the evil doctor from Scrubs. Dr. Namath, they go to rescue Dr.
Guess
Namath.
Guess how he kills him? Guess how he kills the evil doctor from Scrubs? He grabs him in the dick, picks him up by the dick, throws him out the window. Booyah! Awesome. That is some Friday the 13th shit right there, pal.
Yeah, that is good stuff.
This film actually has a bit of a body count. There's quite a lot of people getting killed. Someone gets their head... someone gets their neck broken, but like really slowly and horribly. It goes on forever.
Yeah.
That is uncomfortable.
Yeah, Katana kills this guy in the boardroom, which is pretty grim.
It's like a real body count.
There's a bit when they storm the S.H.I.E.L.D. station, basically Ramirez and Connor get shot to pieces. Like, it's really overly long bit of them just being riddled with bullets. Similar to in the first RoboCop film where Murphy's getting shot and he's just like
but they're immortal, so
they're immortal, so they're fine. They go to try and rescue Dr. Namath. He dies, so that was a waste of time.
He dies instantly. They get there straight away. They're like, we're here to save you. And he goes, too late.
Yep.
Dead.
He's dead. So evil doctor from Scrubs is dead. Katana locks the three of them in a room with a massive turbine that's lowering down and is going to cut their heads off. And so then...
Tom!
So basically...
It doesn't make any sense!
Ramirez then says this thing where it's kind of like... Talking about living your life and all your life experiences, but if you can put them all into one moment... You can achieve great things. And what that means he can do is shoot a light out of his hand to push the fan up and stop them from cutting their heads off so that Connor and Louise can escape. And then he's like, my time is up, but I'm dead now, bye. And then he vanishes.
You know what it is? It's the Poochie episode of The Simpsons where they just write out Poochie with a still frame and he says, I must return to my home planet.
Yeah.
And just flies off.
Yes, basically. So really...
It doesn't make any sense!
Sean Connery does so little in this film. There was absolutely no... You didn't need to have him in
there. He flies
to
America from Scotland to use all of his life force to turn a fan off and then disappears. Sean!
So then...
How much did you get paid?
Probably a lot.
Show me the invoice, Sean.
Yeah. And then Connor and Katana have a sword fight.
Oh, and it's the most boring sword fight in the world. How did they manage to make this futuristic, laser-lit sword fight between two immortals in a massive, big, like, industrial complex. How did they manage to make this the most boring scene in the film?
It's really dull.
It's so boring! And then there's even a bit where Katana picks up McCloud, throws him down the stairs, and every bone in his body breaks, and he has to one by one snap his bones back into place. And I don't give a shit!
Yeah, I know. It's not great. And then, there's a bit, so they're fighting, like, by the energy beam that is, like, generating the shield. And so there's a weird bit where, like, Katana's nearly gonna chop off McCloud's head, and then McCloud manages to stick Katana's hand into the shield, which burns the shit out of him.
Yeah.
And then he gets the upper hand and he chops off Katana's head, and then you have the weakest quickening of any of them in the film. Yeah, he just kind of goes, "Ooh, that tickles." So now it should be, by the logic, which there is none now left in this, but by the logic of the films, he should now be mortal. But for some reason, he's able to walk inside the shield beam, which we just saw burn off Katana's hand. He manages to walk right inside it, and then he kind of has a quickening. Then everything explodes.
Yeah. Turns the shield off.
Turns the shield off. They look up at, like, the night sky, not obscured by the shield.
And then you think there'd be blazing sun coming in. Yeah. But no, it's just more night sky.
Yeah, you never see any sunlight in this film. That is really weird.
Because I wanted them to play that song that's just like, "Let the sun shine."
Yeah, yeah.
But no.
And then you hear Sean Connery, like, being like, "Oh, you've both got your full lives ahead of you, Highlander." Credits.
Freeze frame on his smirking face. Is he immortal or not? Is he fucking immortal or not?
No, I think that implies, you've got your full lives ahead of you, as in,
I don't know, mate. I don't know. Could go either way. Could go either way.
So
what the hell are they going to do in the next one?
I do not believe that this film is considered canon.
Right.
I love any series that that disregards films within the series as being, you know, like, that's not canon. We do not speak of the quickening.
The misfit.
So I think we need to maybe rock up to Rules Corner
and just
unpack some of, like, whatever it was that was going on.
Okay,
so now it's time to properly go to Rules Corner.
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 So, as you've heard, this film really disregards a lot of what was set up.
It plays fast and loose.
Oh, yes. The only thing, though, is, like, that my criticism of, like, the first film is that the reason for why they have immortals is never explained. So this one does explain where they come from, but I don't think that was the explanation that anybody wants.
Oh, yeah, because there's the bit in the first one where McCloud says to Ramirez, "Why are we immortals?" And rather than say, "Don't you remember, it's because we're from Zeiss." Do you not remember that whole bit where we were in Zeiss and we got sent?
He goes, "Nobody knows.
Why does the sun rise?"
Yeah. Oh, nobody knows. So, yeah, that was really... So we've had this whole bit, like, of, like, the quickening being this thing now where they, like, put their fingers in a bowl, and it now means the quickening seems to mean anything in this series, because it relates to there being, like, a bond now specifically between Ramirez and McCloud. But it's also what happens when you chop somebody's head off. It's what happens when you sense that there is an immortal nearby. It happens when you can sense the, you know, like, the heartbeat of a deer on a beach. It just means fucking anything, really. The whole thing of, like, Zeiss being 500 years ago, I mean, so much of that doesn't make sense. And also, just, like, even in this film, like, so in the first film, Ramirez says that he's been alive for over 1,000 years. In this film, he's, like, talking to this woman on a plane and is talking about, like, how beautiful Cleopatra was, and, like, all these other people that, like, would not have been, they would have been dead within this 500-year time frame that
we're
dealing
with.
He's
just trying to get laid. He's just bragging to this lady on the train about all these women, beautiful women he knew.
Yeah, so and then you've got this whole bit that, like, for some reason, if you're banished on Zeiss, like, your punishment is to be an immortal on Earth.
Boo-hoo!
Yeah, but then if you kill everybody, you can return to Zeiss. But how? Because...
So it's a bit like The Running Man or something. Like, all the criminals, they throw them in a
big
thing together.
Yeah, in a big battle royale.
Yeah.
But then, okay, how come in Zeiss, how come, like, they sent these immortals back? How come they aren't continuing to send more immortals back? It's like same complaint I have with, like, the first film. Is it like, so there are immortals. Why do they stop being immortals after a certain point?
Mm.
Because if that's like Zeist prison.
Yeah, and is Kitana in charge of Zeist now then? Did he win the war?
It seems like it.
But he's willing to just, like, walk away to just, like, spend some time fucking about on Earth.
Yeah, like, where rather than just be like, well, if MacLeod comes back, I'll just kill him. I don't know why, yeah. You know, like, he managed to beat MacLeod the first time they were on Zeist. Why does he have to wait around? Also, yeah, like, with the porcupines... When he kills the first one, regenerates, becomes immortal again. Kills the second one, so making him again the last person from Zeist left on Earth. So shouldn't he have just become mortal again at that point? That immortality should have only lasted about 15 minutes.
Yeah. Tom.
And yeah, they're mortal on Zeist. They're not immortal.
Tom, we're two films into this franchise.
Yeah.
We got like five more of these to go. What are we going to do?
And the holy ground thing. Why do aliens respect holy ground from a culture that is not their own?
Oh, I can tell you that, Tom. Clearly Jesus was from Zeist.
Right.
He had the quickening, surely.
Yeah, okay. That makes perfect. So... He was a criminal then.
Yeah.
Exiled from Zeist. Oh my God.
A misunderstood renegade.
Yeah. So, I don't know anymore, mate. I think this is trying to track the rules is just a bad idea. I think it's raised more like.
That is
more
a
questions.
Spicy meatball that you are trying to chew.
Oh my God.
Can I try to calm you down a little bit?
Yes.
With a little visit to story time with Todd Lee T.
Please do. Let's go back to a simpler time when Zeist was not a thing. I love Planet Zeist and I hate it at the same time. I love that it exists in this film. I love that this got made and that people looked at that script and were like, cool, yeah, let's go with that. But my God.
So, story time. A little reminder here. This is, I'm slowly reading the novelization of the first Highlander film, simply called Highlander, There Can Be Only One by Gary Kilworth. I've split it out into equal chunks so that there'll be a small portion to read each episode. And today's portion comes again from the ancient Scotland portion of the first film. And this is the death of Conor MacLeod.
Ooh.
The first death. So, without much further ado, here is story time with Todd Lee T. At that moment, Conor noticed a warrior on a horse moving toward him. There was a lightning flash from the sky and the dark horse reared. Its rider was smiling. He seemed a giant of a man even in the saddle, his broad shoulders covered with a strange cloak. On his head was the skull of an animal, the like of which Conor had never seen before. The image was enough to strike fear into the heart of the bravest MacLeod. The towering figure reached him, the arrogance and cruelty evident on his face, in his full-blown lips and lusterless eyes. Unholy eyes. To Conor, he seemed the manifestation of some nightmarish demon sent by the devil to collect lost souls. "Mother of God," said Conor quietly. The warrior grinned, and Conor's awe increased. Surely those teeth were made for tearing raw flesh from the backs of live men. He was not real. He could not be real. The sword arm of the mighty figure above him was raised, and Conor just had time to raise his shield to take the force of the blow. Such was the power behind the strike that it jars Connor's arm through to his shoulder, and the limb went numb. "What in God's name are you?" cried the youth. The figure laughed and struck out again. Conor fell backward onto the spongy marsh ground, and before he could regain his feet, the warrior had dismounted. He was indeed of massive proportions. Conor scrambled to get to his feet, but in so doing he exposed the whole of his body. The giant man stepped forward and drove the huge sword into Connor's stomach. Join us next time for more story time with Todd Lee T.
I like that. That made the Kurgan sound more evil than he actually appeared. Or like more like that there's... I like the idea of Conor being afraid of the Kurgan.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, the existence of Highlander 2, The Quickening, runs roughshod over a lot of things in the book, even.
Yeah.
You know, it's a full canon of work. But I do really enjoy the florid language that's used. Sadly, I still haven't had a response from the author, Gary Kilworth, about whether or not he'd be interested in talking to me. I will keep persisting just to get even a single quote from the man.
Well, let's, fingers crossed for next time. So,
speaking of next time.
Yeah, so we're going to leave Zeist behind, one hopes.
I'm fairly certain that Zeist isn't going to show up in the next film that we watch.
Yeah, I don't.
So just to recap, actually, the next film we're watching is Highlander, The Adventure Begins.
Yeah.
So this is, we've organised this chronologically. So the fourth film we'll be watching is called Highlander 3, but technically The Adventure Begins came out first. So this is the edited together highlights from the American-made cartoon series edited into a feature-length film.
Yeah.
This one is quite difficult to find, so we apologise if you're trying to watch along and you can't get hold of a copy of this. I wouldn't fret it too much. I don't think it's going to be the best one.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be anywhere as good as The Quickening.
No.
Well, I don't know. We'll see. I think actually might be, I'm not sure if it's American-made or might be a French production.
Oh, is it French?
Quite possibly.
Find out.
Yeah,
It's also worth us pointing out that we mentioned at the end of the last episode that there's two very different versions of Highlander 2, The Quickening, that we've just watched. So we've been watching the original version. There's another version called the Renegade version, which was released a few years later and cut together out of existing footage, but had a very, very different plot.
I think they even managed to shoot a little bit of extra footage.
Possibly even some new footage.
Yeah.
So we will be watching that, but not yet. So this episode has purely been about the original version.
Yeah, the original cinematic release. Mm.
But back to the cartoon, what are your hopes and expectations, Tom? What are your dreams? What's in your little heart?
I have no idea, because I'm wondering who it's going to follow, because I think that the little bit of knowledge I have about it, I think Ramirez is a character in there.
He'd have to be.
But I don't know if Connor McLeod is the main character. I don't know if he might show up, but I think that there might be another McLeod.
Oh, a different McLeod.
And I get the idea that, yeah, like that some of the spin-offs have different McLeods in it. I don't know if the TV series features a different McLeod.
Maybe they're the children that he had during the brief period of humanity that he had. That doesn't make sense.
That doesn't make sense.
Because then they wouldn't be immortal.
Yeah, and then he would have mentioned them. Maybe he's got cousins, but then we saw his cousins were like Dougal and Angus. So I have no idea what's going to happen.
I've got a feeling it's going to be set in the future for no reason, like in the far future. I think it's going to be more like lightsabers than swords.
That might be cool. Yeah. I mean, that I'm not opposed to what we saw in like The Quickening about like having the future element of it, but it was just very poorly done.
Yeah, and unnecessary. It's just you didn't need to do all that.
Everything about it was pretty much unnecessary, though.
I mean, to be fair, this whole podcast is a bit unnecessary. No one's making us do this to ourselves.
And now I feel sad. Actually, no, I regret nothing. Just very quickly, that obviously the I believe that the Renegade version tries to erase all of the Zeistian aspects of this film.
What? Whoa!
Yeah, and I know that it is dumb and it is bad, but at the same time, Zeist forever, never forget.
Give me Zeist or give me death.
Yeah, exactly. I know they made a really terrible mistake and they tried to not make it canon, they've tried to erase it, but like I just feel like you kind of got to embrace the terribleness of this, and you know, it is that thing like when you create something like a piece of art, shall we say, whatever it might be, and you put it out there to the public, the sad thing is you can't take it back.
Well,
they really tried. They have tried.
The Blu-ray edition of Highlander 2 just says Highlander 2 The Quickening, but it's actually the Renegade version. And iTunes have somewhere along the line, that whether by mistake or on purpose, if you search for Highlander 2 The Quickening, there's only one version available and it is the Renegade version. So slowly but surely, the recut, the director's cut, is overtaking the original version.
Yeah.
So if you've got a copy of The Quickening, treasure it.
Yeah. And I find it kind of weird that this film is as reviled as it is, because it is not a good film, but like people like react to it really badly, and it's just like, but this is like a gem of bad filmmaking.
Yeah.
Like it's just that bit when it says the planet Zeist 500 years ago, it's just like, No! Like, when... you'd be hard-pressed to find another film that just, like, just leaps so far from the source material and just goes so off the rails.
I mean, it is a faceplant of a script-writing manoeuvre.
It really is. And I think that it should be treasured for that.
Yeah, learn the important lessons of history or be doomed to repeat them.
Exactly. So, but we'll be back next time.
Yep, for Highlander, The Adventure Begins. If you can find it, awesome. If you can't find it and still want to watch something, maybe see if you can just find some episodes of the American or possibly French Highlander cartoon series.
Yeah, I think you can stream them somewhere.
Yeah, stream a few of those, because the best bits from those are going to be cut together into this film, so you can still watch with us.
So we will see you guys for that.
Until then, stay rad, stay Zeist.
Zeist forever. Never forget.
Bye!
Bye!
Just remember, the quickening.
It sounds like magic.
Oh, it is. Kind of.